Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month we feature a story from the Department of First Stories of our current issue, January-February 2024. The Department of First Stories' mission is to find and bring into print talented new writers in the field of crime fiction. In this instance, we were assisted in finding the new talent by one of our longtime contributors, Scott Loring Sanders, a professor at Lesley University. One of the students in his creative writing class produced a story he thought would be just right for us. The author of the story, Sophia Lynch, had previously concentrated her efforts on literary fiction, but in the Lesley University class, she turned to crime and suspense writing with excellent results. The story centers on an artist's model, and the Massachusetts author knows of what she writes, for she herself has worked as a nude model. Here is Sophia Lynch reading her story, Rendering.
The thing was, word of mouth only got you so far. The art world around Boston was insular and a little skittish, and models tended to form long-term associations with the artists they worked for. It was difficult to branch out. Cold calling the art departments at the colleges would usually at least get you on a list, but Em was getting sick of that atmosphere. The swelter of the portable lights causing sweat to leach from the places where her skin met up with itself, the scared rabbit looks on the students' faces when she took off her robe at the beginning of a session, the aggressive tone of the professors as they bellowed across the studio, telling those poor kids to reach in and pull out the angles and find the areas of light and dark, the occasional whining she overheard about the invisibility of her bones, how much more difficult she was to draw compared to some of the more emaciated models the department employed. During breaks, when she would wrap herself up in her kimono and walk barefoot around the charcoal-scented room, taking sips from her water bottle while peering at the students' attempts, they wouldn't meet her eyes. They wouldn't even accept compliments. What on earth was there to be so nervous about? It was a body, something everyone has, and this was an art studio, not a strip club. Why couldn't they just get over themselves? Then, of course, there were the students, and the occasional instructors, who got over themselves far too quickly and hung around afterwards, asking for her number. Em felt invisible during those sessions, the kind of invisible that can only come of standing stark naked on a pedestal under a spotlight in front of 20 strangers, to which only cuts of raw meat under the glass counter at a butcher can relate. Something more personal, that was what she was after. A long one-on-one session at a devoted artist's eccentric yet cozy home studio. And as she couldn't afford a website, a flyer in the window of an art supply store seemed to her the cheapest and most direct way of requesting it. She designed it simply, including only her name, job description, and contact information. As a backdrop, she used a photocopy of a charcoal drawing she had been given at the end of the first life drawing group she had ever modeled for. The drawing had been done by a demure young man with a windswept yet realistic style. She'd been young then, too. Perhaps even young enough that her naked presence could have been considered a crime. But nothing about that first session had felt criminal, or even awkward. Afterward, the young artist showed her his work, and she fell in love. Not with him, but with the act of modeling. With the feeling of being captured by the talented hands of these makers of things. The money was a nice bonus. But it was the process of life drawing itself that bewitched her, that kept her putting her unclothed self out there time and time again. Vic, a fellow model who was older and had spent a lot of time working in New York before moving to Boston, considered her rapture a handicap. When Em showed her the flyer over tea one afternoon, she told her she was nuts. Anyone could contact you. There'd be no department head to complain to. You would have absolutely no control over the situation. It's not like I'm legally obligated to work with them just because they inquire. Besides, I'm only going to put my phone number on it, not my address or anything. I'll just talk to them on the phone for a while and then decide. Vic was shaking her head before Em even finished speaking. You're going to be fielding calls from random creeps all day long. I will not. All day long. Come on. I'm going to put it up in the window of Utrecht. Only artists go in there. Artists can be creeps. In fact, they're especially prone to being creeps. They just play the eccentric card to catch you off guard. When I was your age, I got suckered into posing for a photographic series that involved me and another chick repeatedly pouring heavy cream over each other's bare breasts. Then the raw hot dogs came out, and it was downhill from there. Luckily, this was before the internet was a thing.
And even if it's not overtly disgusting, do you really want to spend all day trapped in a studio, one-on-one, with some washed-up Egon Schiele wannabe? Any artist who can afford a home studio around here will pay double per hour what colleges can offer. Plus, I like the intimacy, you know? One of Vic's expertly sculpted eyebrows drifted toward her hairline. Em tapped a wooden stirrer against the surface of the tiny table teetering between their knees. I want to talk to the artists. I know you do. I've never understood it. Vic stirred her tea, even though she didn't take sugar. Look, far be it from me to keep food out of your mouth or discourage you from, like, making friends or whatever, but I just have to say this. You keep your dukes up, honey. I mean it. Go ahead and socialize, yak about Hitchcock, whatever. But don't let your guard down for a second. You make sure you have an exit strategy, and a damn good one. Hell, give me a call and I'll rescue your ass in a flash. I doubt that will be necessary. Vic shook her head, widening her eyes in a knowing pulsation of a blink that meant she was done trying to talk sense into her friend. Fake boyfriends are useful too, she said. Mine is a 6'5" ex-Marine with a concealed carry permit, who waits around the corner for me at Dunkin' Donuts while I'm in a session. His name is Meathead Pendragon. You can borrow him if you like. Em wasn't naive. She knew Vic's concern was not unfounded. She did a joint session with a woman for a class at Mass Art once, who told her about the time she worked for a photographer who drove her out to Half Moon Beach and kept her there for 5 hours, half submerged in icy water most of the time, only to throw a hissy fit because his assistant forgot to pack some lens or other. He then dragged the poor kid and all his equipment into the van and drove off, leaving the model shivering, half-naked and soaked on the sand without her clothes, wallet, or cell phone. She had to beg for quarters from a nearby ice cream parlor so she could use a payphone. Someone even called the police and reported her for public lewdness. This was why, when she made her flyer, Em was careful to use the words figure model rather than art model. Art could mean just about anything, but figure model, by her estimation, was a term that would appeal to artists who preferred hand-drawing mediums. It referred not just to the body itself, but also to the process of deconstruction that went along with attempting to render it by hand. She would sit in front of them, and they would figure her out by removing one layer of her at a time and then recreating her from scratch. That was what Em liked to see, some appreciation for the body as a whole. The blue-haired young woman behind the counter at Utrecht was more than happy to put the flyer in the window. Kind of a throwback, she dubbed the effort, after tacking it to an outward-facing bulletin board behind the glass, next to an ad written in black Sharpie on lime-green paper for a previously owned easel in excellent condition. Em thanked her, and as a token of her appreciation, bought the latest edition of Modern Clay. She knew nothing about ceramics, but it was the only thing in there that she could afford, and the vase on the cover looked intriguing, like loops of intestine. The ad went unanswered for 2 solid months. As February slid sloppily into March with no result, Em began to wean herself off the fantasy she had created and went back to cold calling. She managed to book a few sessions at a newly constructed arts center by the river, and while they didn't pay much, the studios were spacious and bright, and the groups she modeled for were made up of gray-haired hobbyists in colorful scarves. They at least smiled at her, but seemed just as reluctant to engage in conversation as the tender young art students had. Em was starting to receive the impression that there was an invisible membrane standing between her and the artist she worked for, like the one separating an egg yolk from the surrounding white, preventing them from mixing. Vic didn't know why she couldn't see this for the good thing that it was. "You are not a person in that room," she would say. "You are a thing. Objectification is in the job description. There is power in that if you can get your romanticism to sit down and shut up." Coming home late one spring night, Em took a detour through the square and passed by Utrecht's windows. The ad for the used easel was still there, now a dingy shade of chartreuse, but her flyer was gone. Perhaps it fell down, she thought, or maybe the manager had concluded that 5 months of free advertising was enough. Em wondered if she should bother replacing it. That seemed pathetic, though, like begging. She tightened the knot in her scarf and proceeded to the red line. As she walked, she mentally crumpled the tantalizing notion of being welcomed into an artist's inner sanctum and tossed it onto the bricks at her feet. She wondered whether the center by the river offered ceramics classes at night, and whether they might give her a discount on the fee, considering that she was technically an employee. Maybe she could learn how to make mugs shaped like pancreases and livers. There had to be a market for stuff like that, right? Especially in an area with so many medical schools. Or maybe she could offer her services to an anatomy class. Vic had told her once that they used to have doctors learn from live models, as well as dead ones, presumably, but Em didn't know if it was still common practice. Perhaps scientists would be more sociable than artists, less wrapped up in themselves. 2 days after the flyer disappeared from the window, Em's phone lit up with an unknown number. She ignored it at first, dismissing it as spam, then realized with a pang of guilt around dinner time that the caller had left a message. As she listened to it in her dark bedroom, she forgot about organ-shaped mugs and anatomy classes and began to unfurl and smooth out her vision of an eccentric yet cozy one-on-one modeling session again. His name was Nathaniel something. His voice wasn't clear on the recording, although she couldn't tell if this was due to static or whether he was just naturally a mumbler. But she caught the part where he said he had seen her flyer in Utrecht a while back and was interested in hiring her. As soon as is ideal for you, was how he put it. She couldn't get a good sense of his age from his voice. He raced through certain words and chewed on others. He was distinctly polite through most of the message, but signed off with an abrupt thanks. When she called him back, he picked up immediately, despite the late hour. The first thing she did after introducing herself was apologize. I haven't had a call about that ad in months, she told him. Nathaniel didn't echo her polite laughter, but he told her not to worry about it. I was nervous about making the call, he said. I've never seen a flyer for a figure model before. It's delightful. She thanked him, beaming in the dark, then moved on to the business side of things. What medium do you typically work in? She asked. Medium? Yeah, like, what do you use? There followed a pause on his end. Watercolors? Em pressed. Acrylics? Oils? Charcoal? Pencil? Oh, I see, I was confused there for a second. I mostly work in ink. Does that strike you as pleasing? Em smiled at his phrasing. Ink's great! I'm just trying to get a sense of how long a session we're talking about here, or whether you'd need me to come back multiple days, that kind of thing. Well, I don't have a specific project in mind or anything right now. I just want to sketch some things out and see if anything comes of it. Great, she said, hoping she didn't sound too eager. Good. Now this will be very informal, Nathaniel said. Informal? This was not a word Em had come to associate with drawing sessions, only dinner parties and weddings. Relaxed, Nathaniel elaborated. Oh, Em said, feeling her shoulders drop down on cue. Good. She arranged to meet him the following Friday afternoon. She would stay for 3 hours, and he would pay her $25 for each of them. The night before, Em climbed into the bath and shaved the stubble from her legs and armpits. She washed her hair and scrubbed her skin. She inspected the backs of her shins and her lower back, both of which were prone to eczema, for dry, red patches. Shortly before departing the next day, she packed her canvas bag, shoving her kimono into the bottom and burying the wind-up kitchen timer she used to keep track of pose lengths in its silk folds. On her way out the door, she filled up the largest water bottle she possessed, cylindrical, heavy as a brick and made of copper, given to her by Vic during one of her alternative wellness crazes, with enough ice water to get her through the session. She rode the bus down Mass Ave to the address he gave her, which turned out to be a defunct restaurant just over the Arlington town line. Em pressed the buzzer outside the entrance to the building and waited on the sidewalk under a maple tree that was shedding its blossoms, hoping she hadn't copied the address down wrong. She watched through the plexiglass door as a man came down the stairs on the other side. He was stocky and dark-haired, young but still older than her, judging by the amount of gray at his temples. He wore glasses. When he looked up and caught sight of her, he looked pleasantly surprised. You're wearing a dress, he said, swinging the door wide. Em looked down at the outfit she had deemed appropriate for such an unseasonably warm afternoon. Yes, I am, she agreed. A real dress, too. Look at how that waist goes in, Nathaniel said. Then he shook his head. Sorry, I didn't mean to come across as objectifying. It's just that most of the models I've worked with have shown up in ugly dancewear or sweats. This is a pleasant anomaly. He was wearing trousers and a vest himself, two pieces of a three-piece suit. It was brown with a pinstripe pattern, and he wore the vest over a plain white t-shirt that looked distinctly unclean. It certainly wasn't the strangest artist's uniform Em had ever seen, but it was up there. She smiled and stuck out her hand in belated greeting. Hi, I'm Em. You're Nathaniel, I presume. He grasped her hand in a firm, jerky way that would have been painful if it had lasted any longer. You'd better hope so, right? He said. The staircase was a long, narrow chute reaching upward. The walls were 1970s fake wood paneling, and the steps were covered in a spongy carpet that probably used to be a creamy white but was now the color of dishwater.
M detected ghosts of tobacco smoke wafting from the walls. As she looked up the stairs, a brief wave of claustrophobic dizziness gripped her below the diaphragm. The stairs were uneven, awkwardly sloped, like they were melting, and the width of the hallway actually seemed to narrow toward the top. Nathaniel took them two at a time. "Careful," he told her over his shoulder. "They just slapped this together when they converted the building. It's practically held together with scotch tape." Eventually, they made it to a lone, partially open door, which Nathaniel held open for her. M slipped inside, grateful to be released from the stairway, only to be greeted by a whole new level of confinement. The main room was a shoebox with one south-facing window. At one end was a kitchenette, with appliances that seemed to belong to roughly the same era as the staircase, and at the other a couch, a chair, and a formica coffee table. The floor was covered in low-pile eggshell carpet, dappled with gray smudges. Charcoal dust, M hoped. Aside from that, the only thing that suggested that this was an artist's studio was the far wall, which was plastered from floor to ceiling with a patchwork of paper. Each boasted an image of a drawing or painting. Some had obviously been printed off the computer, while others were posters with the artist's name and the date of creation noted at the bottom. There were even a small number of postcards. The images were all of women, or more accurately, of women's bodies unclothed. A wall of female flesh, some smooth and pale as marble, some rippling, some itchingly pink. They were beautiful, one could argue, but M found that the sheer number of breasts and pubic creases laid out before her eyes temporarily overwhelmed her sense of appreciation. She might have betrayed herself by blushing had the names printed below them not been those of famous artists. She heard Nathaniel bolt the door behind them and started to compliment the drawings, but he interrupted her. "I know, it's kind of a pathetic excuse for a studio," he said. "Oh no, I don't think so," Em said, making sure not to stammer in her haste to reassure him. Nathaniel let out a wistful sigh. "I could probably afford better, but then I'd run the risk of becoming pretentious." Em laughed. "Well, we can't have that." Nathaniel's mouth twitched. There was something strange about his glasses, she realized. The lenses looked dingy, like they were tinted brown. Behind them, his eyes seemed to simultaneously squint and bulge at the same time. He had a small, pointed nose. His features put her in mind of some small, burrowing creature, unaccustomed to sunlight. He looked at her for a long time. "Is that dress vintage?" he asked finally. "Vintage-ish, I guess," Em said, examining the piping at the waist. She had bought it with Vic the year before at the Garment District. Vic considered the shirtwaist dress one of Western civilization's greatest accomplishments. 80s does 50s or something. Nathaniel shook his head. "Everything old is new again. And again and again and again." "Yeah," Em looked around. "So where can I..." she asked, patting the plush lump in the bottom of her bag that was her kimono. She never changed out of her street clothes in the presence of the artists. It wasn't considered professional. Nathaniel cleared his throat. "Of course," he said, as though he had suddenly remembered what they were both doing there. He pointed to a cubicle of a bathroom next to the tiny kitchenette. "Would you like anything to drink? Coffee or anything?" he asked her. "No, thank you. I'm all right for now." "Or," he pulled a watch out of his vest pocket, an ordinary wristwatch, not a fob, and glanced at it. "I suppose it's late enough in the day for something mildly alcoholic, if such a thing would appeal to you." "Still too early for me, I'm afraid," Em said. Nathaniel's brow creased as though he had accidentally looked directly at a bright light. He slipped the watch back into his pocket. "Well, I'll just get set up out here. Take your time." The bathroom was lit by one trembling yellow bulb, the last survivor in a line of vanity lights above the sink. It wasn't filthy, but there was a dusting of short curly hairs and lint stuck to the surface of every fixture. Em laid her bag down on the toilet seat, which was the cleanest thing in sight. As she bent over to take off her underwear, she felt her buttock touch the cold tile of the opposite wall and recoiled in disgust, then laughed at herself. She wasn't a tall woman by any stretch, and wasn't used to feeling restricted by architecture, but in this apartment she was a giantess. Em looked up and caught sight of her nakedness in the unflattering light. She felt the familiar embarrassment rush in beneath her skin. Even after years of experience, she still had to stare it down. Her skin puckered as a small shiver ran through her limbs. In the glare of that one struggling light bulb, it had taken on a sepia tint, like it had been steeped in tea, or like she had advanced liver disease. When she came out, Nathaniel was sitting in a swivel chair, with a drawing pad balanced on his knees, facing the couch. He had a dip pen with a brass tip, a rag, and a mason jar of ink set up on the coffee table. Em pointed toward the couch. Here? Yeah, you can use that throw to cover it. It's in better shape than the upholstery. Em tugged a thin black synthetic velvet blanket over the seat cushions and one arm of the couch. She tested the firmness of the cushions with one hand but didn't sit. I could start with some quick gesture poses if you want to warm up, she offered. Nathaniel wrinkled his nose. I'm not a big fan of those. I prefer to cut to the chase. Em was relieved. Throwing out gesture poses was far from her favorite way to spend a session. She sat down on the couch and settled herself into its bulk. She untied the kimono's sash and parted its long lapels. Her skin reacquainted itself with the air, this time remaining self-assuredly smooth. Here she was again, naked in the presence of a stranger. What a bizarre calling this was. Most artists kept their eyes cast down at first, making much of sharpening their pencils or moistening their brushes. Nathaniel stared directly at her, his shaded eyes moving jerkily over her, as though they were in the process of printing her. Oh, he murmured. You're not shaved. Em looked down at her legs, not immediately understanding what he meant. He directed her attention by pointing. There. You're not shaved there. No, Em agreed. She shrugged. Is that a problem? Nathaniel shook his head. Not a problem, no. It's just not exactly what I had envisioned, he said. He leaned back in his chair, causing it to squeal, and ran his index finger along his upper lip. Then again, I don't suppose I have to include the hair. Em looked around at the women on the walls, noticing for the first time that they all appeared to be uniformly bald between the legs, at least from where she sat. Nathaniel's vision didn't seem to be a unique one. How about we start with a seated, she asked, eager to move things along. Nathaniel's mouth twitched. A fine idea, he said, propping the pad on his knee. Em bent down and drew the kitchen timer out of her bag. How long do you think, she asked. If we could start with half an hour, Nathaniel said. Em nodded and set the timer. And please, if you wouldn't mind sitting up very, very straight. He held out his hand above both their heads, palm down, conducting her movements as though she were a marionette. Em drew her shoulders back while resting her hands on her lap and pictured her torso as a solid trunk. And could you just turn your head toward the window, please? She obeyed. A sunbeam snuck in through the bottom left corner of the glass and bolted straight for her eye. She squinted but remained still. Good. Nathaniel's voice was husky now, as though he were near tears. Em heard the pen hiss as he applied it to the paper in long strokes. She breathed deeply into her abdomen, feeling the familiar sensation of her upper back beginning to protest, as it tended to do in the first minute of a pose. It would pass. So what is Em short for? Nathaniel asked. Nothing, Em said. She was a master at making small talk while moving nothing but her lips. Oh, come on. You're not really an Emma or an Emmeline? Nope, just Em. Or it could be the letter, couldn't it? M, like that Peter Lorre movie. She tried to control her laughter, but her belly ended up shaking a little. The one about the child murderer? What a brilliant film, my God, Nathaniel said. He tore a sheet off his pad and let it fall to the floor. Oh well, it's not even your real name, anyway. It isn't? His shoulders jerked up toward his ears. Most models don't work under their real names. I suppose most don't. Nathaniel made a few sharp strikes with his pen and then refilled it. I don't do nicknames. People try to call me Nate all the time, or Nat. Nat, like the insect, can you believe that? I don't tolerate it. Everyone should be called just what they want to be called, I think, Em said. Shh, Nathaniel hissed. The syllable cut through the thick air of the studio like the sound of a sheet being torn in two. Em's mouth snapped shut so abruptly that she bit her tongue. She froze, listening to him scratch. When he finally arrived at a stopping place, he sighed and looked up at her. Sorry. I just wanted to capture something and you were distracting me. I'm perfectly fine with staying quiet, Em said. You just can't keep asking me questions. He held up a splotched hand in surrender. Forgive me. It was just the curve of your calf below your knee. How the skin dimples. Amazing. No, I prefer to talk to models. I can just be a tad obsessive, you know. I'm happy to talk. Just, for the love of God, don't move that knee. Em did her very best to remain mindful of her knee.
It never ceased to amaze her what little details of her anatomy artists latched onto. It was never anything she noticed during her own private perusals of her body. Nathaniel scratched and scratched, looking up furiously every now and then, dipping his pen in ink and plunging back down to scratch some more. When the timer went off, he regarded it with a curled lip. "Oh, be quiet," he muttered. "Hysterical instrument." "Just as well," Em said, stretching. "My trapezius muscles were starting to object." "Maybe you need a corset," Nathaniel said. "It would hold you up." "Awfully hard to breathe, though," Em said. Nathaniel considered his drawing for a moment, his brow condensing into ripples. There was a sheen to them, perspiration. He tore the page off the pad and placed it face down on the floor beside his chair. "I believe you just learned to breathe differently," he said. Em rolled her neck from side to side and wondered how on earth he could possibly know this. "What do you do?" she asked him. Nathaniel looked up at her as though she had just asked him what time it was in Moscow. "You know, for a living. I work at the art museum," he said. "I'm a conservator. I touch up and repair the artwork, make sure it doesn't suffer the effects of age." "That sounds fascinating." "I'm not ashamed of it," he said. "I never said you were," she said. "Don't get me wrong, I enjoy creating art," Nathaniel went on, as if she hadn't spoken a word. "But I also enjoy food and shelter, and I enjoy my work. I get to form personal relationships with great works of art. How many people can say that? I get to study all the old techniques and apply them. I love working with the exact materials the original painters used. That's fascinating." "Wasn't a lot of that stuff pretty toxic?" "Some of it was, yes. They make me wear gloves and a mask when I handle those." Nathaniel raised his thumb up to his lips and nipped at the cuticle with his teeth. "But you know, a lot of the ancient materials man used to make art with were quite benign. Just organic materials like berry juices, fat, saliva, bone meal, blood even. That doesn't sound so benign to me. Compared to lead or arsenic, sure it is." Something about the way he rushed through his sentences gave Em the feeling that he was trying to impress her. This wouldn't have bothered her so much if it weren't for the fact that she wasn't wearing anything. "Shall we try reclining?" she asked. Nathaniel tucked his chin in toward his chest like a tortoise as he slid back into an upright position. "Why not?" Em reached for the kitchen timer. Nathaniel groaned like a heat-stricken cow. "Oh, for heaven's sake, might we leave that distracting influence to one side this time?" "Fine," Em said lightly. "Then it's up to you to keep track of time." He slipped the wristwatch out of his pocket again and consulted it. "Do you think I can be trusted with such a weighty responsibility?" he muttered. Em smirked. "Let's say an hour. That's a nice round number." She shifted down so that her legs were propped up on the arm of the couch, but he stopped her and told her to turn over, that he wanted to get a good view of the curve of her spine. "The good old odalisk pose," Em joked. Nathaniel didn't so much as crack a smile. He brushed his hand across the fresh piece of paper, banishing an invisible film of grit, and refilled his pen. "You know they were whores, right?" he said, staring down at the paper. "More like concubines," Em said. "What's the difference?" "Slavery," Nathaniel grunted. "Not uncommon throughout history, either." "What, slavery?" "Your hip is drifting down. Could you adjust it, please?" Nathaniel said. She did so, and he let out a long hiss of a sigh between his teeth. "Models being whores, I meant," he continued. Em cast her eyes up at the 5 or so square feet of nude flesh lurking above her head. "Sounds awfully expensive," she said under her breath. "What?" Nathaniel said, raising his voice again so that the word came out more closely resembling an admonishment than a question. Em coughed in as unobtrusive a way as she could manage. "Weren't a lot of them the artists' wives? Like Elizabeth Siddal. She was married to Dante Gabriel Rossetti," she said. "Wives, sure. Wives, mistresses, whores. A distinction without a difference." "I wish you would raise your arm above your head," Nathaniel said, squinting at her through the dim lenses of his glasses. "Why don't you ask me? I might just do it," Em said. Nathaniel seemed surprised. "Would you?" She cocked her elbow and brought her right arm to rest against the side of her head. As soon as she did so, she heard Nathaniel beginning to scratch at his pad behind her back. The sound felt like it was on the inside of her skull. It stopped for a moment. "How on earth do you know about Elizabeth Siddal?" he asked her. "I read a book," Em said, hoping he couldn't sense her frowning from behind. "Well, did you know she killed herself?" he said, his tone becoming strangely catty. "Overdosed on laudanum. That was after she nearly froze to death posing for John Everett Millais's Ophelia." "Oh?" "Yeah,
He had her pose in a bathtub for hours, pretending to be drowned. The pen let out a couple of shrieks as Nathaniel drew it across the paper in slashes, then a click signifying that he had roughly set it down on the table. "This is simply not working for me," he said. M wasn't sure whether he was referring to the pose or the pen. She glanced over her shoulder at him. "We could try something else." Nathaniel was gnawing at his cuticle again, shaking his head slowly. He withdrew his thumb from his mouth and pointed it at her. "It's just that you look so voluptuous at first glance, but it's really all in your breasts and legs. Your hips are, in fact, depressingly straight for a woman of your body type." M stared at him. "What body," she wondered, "did he think her hips belonged to, if not this one?" Nathaniel shook his head and giggled breathlessly to himself. "If only I could carve away some of that extra flesh from below your ribs, it would yield a much more satisfying waist-to-hip ratio, like the one you were trying to create by wearing that dress." M could feel herself bristling, literally, like a defensive cat arching its back. Had she a tail, it would resemble a bottle brush. "Do you want to move on to something else, something more satisfying?" she asked flatly. Nathaniel sighed. "No, I don't think so. I might take some artistic liberties with those hips, but that's my right." M pressed her cheek into the black blanket that covered the couch. "Your foot was a little lower," he corrected her. She adjusted it. "Thank you." Scratch, scratch, scratch. M could practically feel the strokes against her skin now. She developed an intense itch at the center of her back. The eczema returning. She closed her eyes, fighting the urge to fidget. At times like these, she wished she was a horse, capable of shivering different patches of her skin at will. "I never think I have finished a nude until I think I could pinch it," Nathaniel murmured. M lifted her ear from the upholstery, wondering if she had heard him correctly. "Ah, your back is tensing up again. Could you relax it for me?" M tried her best, despite the way her heart had begun to dash against her ribcage. "What did you say just then?" she asked him. "I was quoting Renoir." "Oh." M found herself only able to breathe into the very tops of her lungs. She might as well have been wearing a corset. Kind of an asshole, wasn't he? She heard Nathaniel's pen cease its scratching. When he spoke, his voice was about an octave lower than the voice that had complimented her dress at the door. "Auguste Renoir was the most incredible painter who ever lived." M jerked upright and gripped her foot. "Cramp," she explained to Nathaniel through gritted teeth. His eyes and mouth turned down at the corners. She could have sworn that the lenses of his glasses suddenly grew several shades darker. "You're far more delicate than you look," he said. Then he smiled again, showing his teeth. They were square, the teeth of a lifelong nail-biter. "On the outside, you're solid, like one of Renoir's bathers. But inside, you're as frail and sickly as Lizzie Siddall." M couldn't take much more of this. She wouldn't. She sat up and crossed her legs. "You disagree?" Nathaniel said. "Yes." He put his pad and pen on the coffee table and leaned back in his chair. It didn't just swivel, she realized. It had the capacity to nod and roll around like a neck. "You think you're something different?" he said. M swallowed. "You don't know me at all," she said, straining to keep her voice steady. Nathaniel began to laugh through his nose. "I do, though. Oh, do I ever. I've been staring at versions of you for years, building you up, breaking you down, inhaling your poison, looking at you." He tilted his head from side to side as he spoke. Then he leaned forward again and whispered, "This body of yours, it's not original. It's a cheap forgery. 1990s does 1890s. M forced herself to look him in the eye. It was hard to do that with a man, she considered, and not reflexively smile, even when you were distinctly unamused. A reflex, she thought. Survival of the softest. She could see the length of herself reflected in the dingy lenses of his glasses. The pale, nude figure of a woman rising from an inky velvet nest. And behind her, the figures of countless other women, pinned to the wall, their limbs cocked at the elbows and knees, triangular, like moth's wings. She could see some of their faces. They were placid, almost bored. She could see her own face, the shard of sunlight falling across her cheek and turning it into an ember below the dark hollow of her eye. Chiaroscuro, she had once heard an instructor call that effect. The contrast between light and shadow. How it grounds an object, lends it presence. "Could I trouble you for a glass of water?" she asked him. Nathaniel shrunk back from her and poked out his lower lip. I've offended you, haven't I? He said.
No, you haven't, Em said. I'm just really thirsty, and I suddenly realized that I forgot to bring my water bottle with me, like an idiot.
She managed a quick smile.
Nathaniel tossed his head. That was indeed foolish, he said.
He got to his feet and padded across the vast floor to the kitchenette.
I suppose your mind was on bigger things.
Em shrugged on her robe.
You're probably right, she said.
She rose from the couch and bent forward to touch her toes, to grab hold of her arches. The bottoms of her feet were coated in grit. Nathaniel was clattering around through the cabinets, searching for a clean glass. Em turned her head and considered her bag deflatedly leaning against the couch. She reached for it. She could feel the dampness of the condensation that had formed on the water bottle's copper exterior through the fabric. It was still cold. She rolled upright slowly, one vertebrae at a time, and tilted her neck from one side to the other. The strain felt invigorating, as though she had just acquired a few extra inches of bone and muscle. Nathaniel had given up his search and begun to wash one of the dirty coffee mugs beside the sink.
I don't have company that often, he was saying, explaining.
He sudsed the mug up, rinsed it, and sudsed it up again.
I've never understood it. I'm a very gregarious person, very sociable. I take such pleasure in other people.
He rinsed the mug a final time and began to dry it. The back of his vest was made of some kind of shiny material, Em observed. Something trying to be silk, but not quite making it. The barber, if he consulted such a person, had shaved his neck the last time he'd had his hair cut, leaving two triangles of black stubble at the base of his neck.
Hey, I don't suppose when we're done here...
Em decided, at this point, to save him the embarrassment of asking the inevitable question. The water bottle, filled to its brim with ice, did not need to be swung nearly as hard as she anticipated in order for Nathaniel to go down. It hit the base of his skull, emitting a curiously dull chunk as it met with the very top of his spine, and taking with it a smear of blood in the shape of Iceland. His muddy glasses tumbled from his face as the impact rippled through him, his head snapping backward, his torso crumpling, his knees folding beneath him in a squat. Then he fell away from her, his neck powerless to keep his face from meeting with the dusty floor. Em stood over him, leaning forward as though she were gazing into a shallow stream. Whether or not he was still breathing was not immediately apparent, and not something that concerned her all that much. The object that was Nathaniel was what concerned her, its stillness, its solidity, its presence. She tried her best to see it in its entirety, its areas of light and shadow, to appreciate it for what it was. Then she crossed the floor and picked up the drawing pad. She tore away his most recent drawing of her, revealing a fresh page, and plucked the pen out of the ink bottle where he had left it. With her free arm, she rolled the swivel chair across the carpet. It took a couple of tries to get it in precisely the right spot, with the best view of the angle she found most interesting. The finished drawing was not what she would call skilled, but there was a frankness to it that she liked. She pinned it at eye level, to a bare patch in the wall of women, before retreating to the bathroom to change. That evening, after she'd left the studio in Arlington with all of her things and ridden the bus to Harvard Square and stopped to buy a croissant at Au Bon Pain with her own money, she had left Nathaniel's alone, hadn't so much as extracted her fee from his wallet, and ridden the train the rest of the way home and stripped off her clothes again and slipped into the bath and let the water warm the entirety of her skin, Em arrived at the conclusion that she would never be an artist. An artist would have at least signed her work, perhaps left a written statement explaining the grand concept behind what she'd done. But concept had never been the thing that attracted Em to the arts. It had always been the process, she thought, as she examined the mauve imprint the tight fabric of her dress had left in the flesh of her waist. The simple process of rendering the body by hand.
Rendering is copyrighted by Sophia Lynch. Music for the podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing were done by Kevin Wheeler and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycreammysterymagazine.com.